I feel very fortunate to be able to follow these. I was trying to come up with a name, activist researchers or researcher activists or incredible communicators. What I'd like to talk about this morning has to do with some projects that we've been working on that have been collaborations across agricultural research and botanic gardens and museums to some degree. It's also an aspirational talk about things that we'd like to do in the future that will absolutely require these sort of collaborations. let's see if I can make that argument for you. The focus of the talk is on a set of genetic resources or interesting plants that are crop wild relatives. For those that are unfamiliar with the term, these are the progenitors and the wild cousins of our crops, which is the below example, which are wild tomatoes. They're interesting plants for a couple of reasons for us. One is that they're useful for agriculture as genetic resources. A lot of the use in the past has been for pest and disease resistance, increasingly for abiotic stress tolerance, for breeding traits of use. Nutritional quality and other things are being looked at. These are four examples of U.S. crop wild relatives. The other side of the interest for us is that they are wild plants that are very often threatened. These are four crop wild relatives of the United States, again, that are federally or state-listed threatened species, two of which live close to here in Florida. I was hoping our tour yesterday would actually stop for us to see a couple of these characters, which we didn't get to see. But Okeechobee gourd, which is around the two populations left around Lake Okeechobee, just southeast of here, and this Prunus geniculata, which is a little bit north of here. Just a couple populations left of that as well. So there's this dichotomy for guapa relatives. They're useful, they're threatened, they're wild. Not a typical resource for a lot of agricultural scientists, not particularly a typical interest for botanic gardens in the sense of kind of being agriculture related or even weedy in a certain way. So we've been working on a project on the international or global level, if you will, for the last 5 or 6 years, seven years now. There's five more years actually to go on this. And very fortunate to have a project that's actually 10 years long. And we were able to argue for that because we wanted to take basically a project all the way from wildness to usefulness in agriculture, which takes at least that long, or usually quite a bit longer. What we wanted to do is understand who are the species around the world that are wild, that are the most closely related to important food crops, and figure out how well they are collected and conserved in our seed banks where they're available to the public, to researchers. If they're not available, if they're out there wild but we don't have them, to go out and collect them and conserve them, and then to take them through a whole other set of processes that are the second half of the project to make them useful through crossing with domesticated varieties, with modern varieties, so that we generate materials that have new traits but are also basically recognizable to plant breeders. And so that's been interesting, and I've been mostly involved in the first parts of it, especially the priority setting or the gap analysis. And so this is what I'd like to talk about just a few minutes, because it's taken a lot of collaborations with botanic gardens and museums and such. Essentially what we did was we tried to figure out who these species are, and once we knew, then to gather data on these species, and what that meant is from herbaria and from gene bank passport data, where have they been seen in the past or where have they been collected from? Typically, if you have a specimen in a herbaria, there'll be some data that says, you know, I collected this along this roadside in this state and county, et cetera. So we gathered that data, and then we used that after processing it and cleaning it up taxonomically and geographically to model where we think the species should theoretically occur more or less. That is, you take all the pieces of data for a species, and then you can do interesting mathematics that have to do with similarities in soil and climates and guesstimate where we think a species should occur. Then we compare that to where we've already gone and collected them in gene banks. We end up with funny-looking figures that tell us which are the most important species to go out and collect and which populations are the most important to. And finally, we come up with these gap maps that say these are the most important places. Actually, in this case, I think that's a... Yeah, so this is... a wild maize or a wild corn kind of gap map of where you might go most importantly to figure out That first process of gathering that data took about 3 years. It was really interesting. We ended up with about 20 million records. Those came from online repositories that are increasingly available. Thank goodness, and thanks to the Botanic Garden and Herbaria community in large part. It also took us getting in touch with those folks and asking for their data resources directly that are not yet kind of online and easy to get, especially in bulk downloads. It also took us doing field work in the sense of going to botanic gardens and hanging out for a week and grabbing the stuff that's not yet digitized, actually taking photos and having our students spend 2 years digitizing that information. And we come up with a map like that. So that's the underlying information. Why I sort of want to emphasize just once again, that community, the botanic resource community, are really the folks that harbor that information on where are these species and who are they, and determining the differences between species, their identities, that can be confusing and complicated, even for our most important species, groups like wild maize. The tripsicums are still quite not figured out and complicated of who they are and where they live. The models we put together, I just wanted to show you a very summary of the whole project of where is the diversity of wild relatives of crops across the world. It's probably not surprising. You see the Fertile Crescent there is quite important. But the United States also comes out as quite a few species here. And that was interesting and maybe even a little surprising for us. A couple other things that in this project Botanic Gardens did, in the collecting and the conservation phase, a lot of data generation for partners around the world. Who are your species and where can you go and how do you collect them and how do you dry them and how do you send them to the seed bank, et cetera. That's a pipeline that the Kew Botanic Garden has been doing for years with partners, and so they've known how to do that. They're kind of almost a mixture between a botanic garden and what we recognize as an agriculture resources gene bank. They're almost somewhere in between. In this project, we ended up with seeds being kept, of course, in their home countries, typically in national institutes, and then being sent to the Millennium Seed Bank in Kew, in the UK, typically to a CGIAR center, another center that's going to do a lot of the pre-breeding activities, and finally to Svalbard Global Seed Vault. So about 4 backups of these seeds around the world, all available in one form or another to the public through the appropriate political mechanisms. As I mentioned, one of the most important things was that the diversity was surprisingly high in the US, and also the gaps, that is, the species of high priorities were also pretty high in the US. And so that's a global project, and it's going on, but we are turning now to looking at what we can do in the U.S. about it. And unfortunately, the global project can't give us a lot of money in the U.S. To work on it, and so we're looking at ways to collaborate again with the botanic community to get this job done. We did an inventory in the U.S. of what our priorities in terms of species that are related to food crops are, and so that's out there. And then we've started mapping and modeling these species to try to figure out where they live. So this is, again, the case of taking these points that we get from herbaria and then using these mathematical models to guesstimate more or less where we think these species are. These are an example of 3 wild sunflower species that are quite well defined where they occur. They're not always that clean and simple. If you put that all together, we've been working on kind of a summary feeling of where our species diversity is. And of course, it doesn't just cut off at the borders of our country, and so important to do that in the North American context. And so this is a look of a little bit of a wider look. It's 618 of our relatives, of our food crops, and other species that we consider of high interest in the crop-wild relative sphere. Is this map surprising to anybody, where the diversity is at all? It was for us. It's real in the sense that we've cross-checked this in many different ways, and they're really, truly, this is not just an artifact of mathematics and such. It's quite interesting. Florida really does have quite a lot of diversity there, too. It kind of get washed out. You focus on the red, but even the yellows can be, that's quite a lot of diversity of interesting species to look at. And so why do we need to collaborate to do this kind of work? Well, one reason, although it's kind of a simple example, is that this is our U.S. public gene bank system where we're located. Of course, we work in many locations and have collaborations across. But to some degree, of course, we have our own spheres and our own ability to just get out there and do our thing. This, on the other hand, is the location of public botanic gardens and affiliates around North America. I think the speakers before me did speak to the, well, I think they're exemplars of collaborations, but they also spoke to the lack of collaborations that or how they could be improved. That's certainly true. I think for us, we're just beginning to really talk about how we might think on not just collaborating on the sharing of information and on figuring out taxonomy and figuring out distributions, but really mobilizing now, thinking about how we can engage the communities within botanic gardens and their public that are hobby botanists and those sort of folks, the natural resources communities or natural heritage communities, to within their spheres go out there and cross-check populations. Are they really there? Are they threatened? Figure out when they're drying up and when we could go out and collect the seeds, really work together in a really effective way. And that's what I'm most terribly excited about these days, is doing something like that together. Taking that even a step further would be imagining together, again, on the very top is sort of the data and information, which we're doing very well, actually, building systems where we can access that data and share it together, understand how we talk to each other. That middle sphere is what we're talking about, but really needs to be fleshed out further. How can we complement each other? On the far left, that's Stephanie Green sitting in the red in the middle here, walking back in our national repository, our long-term facility for conserving seeds in Fort Collins. How can we put that middle piece together, which is the botanic gardens? What species would complement the system very well to conserve there? And then finally, on the far right, is our largest public lands in the United States. The U.S. Forest Service, the BLM, and others who conserve large amounts of land. Where is conservation really, really best done or most effectively or efficiently done just in the wild, and how to complement and understand together how we take care of those populations as a whole? A challenging project to think of even how to figure out where the information is and how to do that, but I think that's what we need to do if we really want to do a national level effort of conserving our relatives. Tara mentioned the international agreements in the UN and such about doing this. There's language very much now about how countries by 2020 even, which is a scary number, should have gotten this done. Whether we'll get that done, you know, in a couple of years is unlikely, but we'd like to head that direction very much. And then thinking about how we can, of course, get that out to the public, to our researchers, and also, of course, through the enjoyment that I think will largely happen through the botanic gardens and museums. Thanks very much. I hope that was invoked a couple of thoughts for you.